Welcome to season 6 of the Inspire podcast. And in a moment, you'll hear my conversation with Melanie Burns, the Deputy Chief Human Resources Officer for TD Bank. We jump right into the conversation, and I didn't get into her deep expertise and credentials. So I wanted to take a moment to tell you about what an impressive executive Melanie is. She joined TD back in 2011 as VP of Human Resources and progressed to the role of Executive Vice President in June of 2023. And just a year later, in 2024, she became Deputy CHRO. Melanie leads the people and culture strategies for the bank across their entire global footprint. That means she manages talent, the future of work, culture and diversity, equity and inclusion. She also leads the HR business partner portfolio, supporting TD's lines of business, there are a lot of them, and functional teams. She's a member of the senior executive team at TD. She chairs the bank's Colleague Experience Council. So she really has her finger in a lot of pots related to talent, and that's what we'll talk about. She holds a BBA from Toronto Metropolitan University, a master's in education from the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education. Outside of her day job, she's the former chair of the HR committee and board member for the Wood Green Community Services, and she currently sits as a board director for West Park Health Care Center, where she also serves as a member of the executive committee. So very impressive leader with a truly global scope, and that makes for a really exciting discussion. And now here is that conversation. Welcome to the Inspire podcast, where we examine what it takes to intentionally inspire. I'm your host, Bart Egnall, president and CEO of the Humphrey Group. And if you've ever asked yourself, how can you develop an authentic leadership presence? Or how can you tell stories that have people hanging off every word? Well, then this podcast is for you. And it's not just for executives. This is a podcast for anyone who wants to influence and inspire others in their work, but also in their life. So my guest on today's episode of the Inspire podcast is Melanie Burns. And Melanie, you are the Deputy Chief Human Resources Officer of TD Bank Group. Welcome to the Inspire podcast.
Thank you. I am very, very excited to be here.
This is a time in the world of leadership that I think in my 20 years, I've never seen things changing so rapidly. Yeah. Where each year, you know, we could say the world has changed, whether it's COVID, remote work, the great resignation, now AI. Mm-hmm. The world seems to be shifting. Is that a fair comment when it comes to what talent looks like and what it takes to build talent?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've been in the business and in human resources for a long time. And so it seems to me that change and the topic of change has always been critically important. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about it. The world has always, always moved quickly. But there's something really unique. I stop myself from saying special. There's something really unique about the environment that we're in. And I would say the last 5 years are like nothing that I have ever seen before in my 35 years.
So it's not just me.
It's not just you. It really isn't just you, Bart. It's all around us, and it is hard to figure out. It's hard for us to reach back and to find the skills or the tools or the solutions or whatever it is that we're looking for. It's hard to find that and apply it to what's going on right now.
I know you represent and serve so many parts of the bank.
Yeah.
And you talk to people at all levels. What are they saying right now about this moment in time that reinforces your view that it really is like a special time?
What I hear more about is the changing nature of work, the fact that we're in a hybrid model, which is very, very new for leaders to manage and to get comfortable with, that there is so much challenge in the world right now. Many groups who are in difficult circumstances, there's politics at play, unlike any time that I've experienced before. The world pressures are significant. And so then you bring it into an organization like TD as a bank, and what we're trying to accomplish. What we're trying to accomplish is being there for our customers, being there for our colleagues and our communities, to be a solution for them at a time that is stressful mm-hmm. and painful for a lot mm-hmm. of people, and to be that organization that's got people who actually care what you're going through mm-hmm. and we are here to help in some ways that are most vulnerable for our customers, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about their financial health. We're talking about their financial mm-hmm. confidence. And we're trying to be partners with them at a time when the world is incredibly unique. Right. And I think about social media pressures, and I think about mental health challenges, mm-hmm. and we think about diversity and equity and inclusion, and, mm-hmm. and where the world is on all of those things seems unstable, mm-hmm. and it feels unstable. Mm-hmm.
And to your customers, and also, I know, to leaders in the bank.
That's right.
And so I know that what we're going to talk about today is how you are thinking, how, and I say you, mm-hmm. but also the bank is thinking about talent management.
Yeah.
And how leaders, I mean, even people listening who don't work at TD, I think can learn a lot from your perspective on what it takes to cultivate talent.
Yeah.
And what hasn't changed. I mean, because I think we've talked a lot about what has changed, but there's a whole lot that hasn't. So we'll get to that, but let's just take a step back and let's talk about you. Yeah. What's led you to this point? Because I know, for example, you're the only one in your 8 siblings or 7 siblings.
7
in you,
siblings, yeah.
Who ended up in the corporate world.
So yes, lucky me.
Lucky you. So how did you become the chosen one of corporate Canada?
Well, listen, I had, at the age of 5, I knew exactly what I was going to do, and I followed that path. Of course, none of that is true.
What was it? What was it at age 5?
I could not have had a life that began further from the environment in which I work today. Yeah, I grew up the youngest of 8 mm-hmm. in a town of 2,000 people. My mom worked at home, and my dad ran the post office in our hometown for.
And what was the town?
Well, Bancroft, Ontario. So I lived there until I was 19 years old, mm-hmm. and I think that what I had and was really blessed to have in my older siblings, as well as my parents, was this real message around the importance of education. Hmm. And I really think also a message of, don't stay here. Mm-hmm. Go out and explore the world. So travel was important to my parents, and education was important. And so going to university was just kind of something that was expected. But I didn't really know what I was going to do with that. And I remember a pivotal conversation with one of my sisters where she said, you're 16, what do you think you want to do? And I said, well, I think I want to go into speech pathology because that sounded fancy.
Right.
And she said, oh, I don't think you should do that. I think you should get a business degree. To which I said, okay, I'll do that then.
Boy, so I hope you pay her a royalty every year.
Yeah, like people say to me all the time, do you need to have a plan, mm-hmm. a career plan? Well, you do if you're a planful person. Mm. But if you're not a planful person, then go out and experience things and it'll happen. I did expect that I would be a really good receptionist. That's what I really thought, this is what I'm going
to. I can see the qualities in you.
Yeah, I like to have a laugh. I'm pretty friendly, but the limits of how I saw my career was pretty short. And I was thinking, I'll be a great receptionist, maybe I'll become a recruiter. But what happened was the unique work environments that I entered into just kept opening doors. And I think that I was so curious that I just kept asking questions. And then I'd get bored, and then I'd ask to do different things. And so that just kept growing and growing and growing. And so here I am. In this role that I never would have anticipated all those many years.
From all those years of speech pathology later.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really glad I didn't become a speech pathologist.
I'm sure many people at TD are glad that you did. So before we jump to where you are today, how did you get into the world of talent?
I lucked into being called for an opportunity at TD by somebody who had a very different perspective on talent management. And I just remembered having the interview here and listening to him and how he interviewed me. And I thought, I want to be able to do that. Because he was unique in how he thought about it. And I thought, I want to learn from that. And then the more I got into the school of talent, when I really realized that one of the fundamental roles that HR should be playing is ensuring that every individual who works for that organization is the right individual at that point, and that we are being provocative in pushing around how we think about the talent of the future. And so that I started to really love and consume as much as I could about the talent space, because I think this is fundamental to organizations.
And I know today it's just one piece of the portfolio that you manage, but it's really the focus of our conversation, because I think every organization wins on its talent, and leaders in particular, and we're going to talk about this, have to attract, retain, and engage talent.
Yeah.
And that's become very different in the last few years. So maybe we transition now to talk, we've alluded to it, but let's just dig into it. How everything, before we get to what hasn't changed and what has, what has changed in the last, you mentioned the last 5 years have been unprecedented.
Yeah, the last 5 years have been unprecedented. And I mean, we went into the pandemic where that was just a learning experience for everyone, where all of a sudden we're sending people home. So now we can't watch them do their work.
Right.
We're overseeing outputs of work. And so that connection of being in the office and watching employees be productive shifted to, I can't see what you're doing day in and day out. I'm not going to monitor that, but I have to trust that you are on top of the work that we are asking you to do and that you are being productive. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we started to see that shift in how people managed work and how they managed people. And then of course there was that whole element of the Great Resignation, which was fascinating. You were all scrambling to find out, you know, where were we losing people? And oh my goodness, now that all the global boundaries are down, we're going to be losing people to Kazakhstan.
Was it real? I have to ask. I mean, there was the hue and cry, but at TD, what did you statistically observe during the rigor?
We did see that we lost people in certain parts of our business. Right. And what I would call it was not a great resignation as much as I would call it the great job switch. We were seeing lots of people go from contact center roles in our organization to contact center roles elsewhere.
Right.
But the media really pumped that up, you know, Bart. They really made it, you know, people are leaving in droves. And I can't speak to healthcare, where I think there were really significant challenges and burnout that were occurring there. What we were experiencing here was exactly what all large organizations were experiencing, was this churn of people who were getting a little bit more money to go to a different organization and vice versa. And that that went on for a period of time and we monitored that, but it never reached a point where we were worried that that we weren't going to be able to staff branches.
The rhetoric didn't match the reality.
It didn't match the reality, but that was important for us to be able to really drill in to see was what we were experiencing unique from what other banks were experiencing or other large organizations. And we weren't. Mm-hmm. But it helped us get underneath. So why were people staying? And so the Great Resignation didn't really turn out to be that. And I think that that's what's so important in the talent game.
Right.
Is that you don't get duped. You don't get duped by what others are saying is happening without managing your own facts, without fundamentally understanding what's going on in your own organization. And as an HR leader, particularly not to get absorbed in a narrative that isn't accurate.
That's fascinating.
And instead just get in there, find out what is happening and the reality of that, and to really convince people that this is where they want to stay.
So another headline that I'd like you to comment on during that time when we talk about what has changed in these last 5 years is the perception that suddenly, employees were demanding far more of the organization and far more of their leaders. You know, I've heard, you know, anecdotally from a lot of the clients I coach that they felt the relationship almost inverted between a leader and direct reports. Is that something that you observed at TD during these years?
You bet. And I would say I don't see that as a bad thing. I didn't see that as a bad thing or a negative in any event, right? Is that all of a sudden, it felt like our colleagues were in more of a position where they could say, actually, I don't want to come back into the office and all of that. And what that required us to do was to convince them why there was value in that.
Right.
You know, we are in the trust business. We are in the people business. And as our CEO has said to me a few times, we're not selling T-shirts. And so when you're in a business that is about trust and about relationship, we really fundamentally believe that you can only build that by connectivity, and that's personal connectivity. And so, but we did have to come out to our colleagues and say, this is why we value it. And you matter to us.
Right.
And so since you matter to us, we want you to be able to come into the office so that we can have that connection with you. I don't want to have a performance discussion with you that's virtual.
Right.
As much as I love the fact that we can do that.
There's something powerful about human connection.
That's right. Yeah. Human connection really, in our business in particular, really matters.
Well, you've alluded to, and I know you alluded to, the return to office, and obviously there's AI coming, and we could go on, but I think, you know, when you look at these collection of once in a generation changes, all packed into 5 years, it's fair to say that for leaders and for organizations, I'd imagine TD included, the concept of how we attract, engage, and develop talent has changed. How would you say, overall, before we talk about what hasn't changed, what would you say 5 years in, your big conclusions on what has changed in talent management?
I think the thing that really has changed in talent management that we have to be incredibly sensitive to is that people have options.
Right? Okay.
And so where I started by saying, you know, my dad worked in the post office. Mm-hmm. He ran the post office in my hometown for 43 years. I mean, people generally are not staying with companies for 43 years. TD is my fifth employer, my last, but my fifth employer.
I like the way you put my last.
Hopefully.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is about a collection of experiences, much more than it is about staying in one organization and having your path be that. And that does still happen,
right,
by the way. And I think that is wonderful that still happens.
For the people for whom it's the right path.
That's right.
And where that matches the bank. I know we'll talk about that later. But
that's right. And so we kind of got into an environment of an open market when it comes to exceptional talent. They have options.
Right.
So how do we think about them consistently choosing TD? How do we ensure that they know where they stand with TD? And so that notion of I'm going to sit and wait to be told when I'm ready for a promotion or when I'm the person is now a much more what I call an adult-to-adult conversation, which is where do I stand? Where do you see me?
So it's a dialogue.
It's a dialogue.
Right.
And it is all right for us to be and necessary for us to be authentic in that conversation, right? And truthful in that conversation. And so that's what I notice is that there's, especially coming out of the pandemic, where I think that people felt that their careers stalled for a couple of years. We came out of the pandemic and then all of a sudden people were booking time with me saying, where do I go from here? And, you know, chop, chop.
I waited 2 years.
I waited 2 years. I sat in that role. I delivered what I was
exactly.
supposed to deliver. Now what are you going to do
Where's
for
my promotion?
Me? And so that pressure from our employee base to say, I'm ready. And if you're not ready, then I'm going to go and do this someplace else. I wouldn't say it was a surprise to us because we're comfortable navigating those conversations, but the pressure was definitely on.
And I imagine it's going to continue, and it really relates to what we'll talk about later, which is the role that leaders play.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's now shift in this changing world. So much has changed, completely different dynamic, employer, employee, leader, manager. The message I got when we were preparing is that with all that change, the fundamentals have stayed the same.
Right.
So what are the fundamentals? Let's talk about those. What's still the same? Someone's listening. And let me just kind of give you a couple archetypes of people who might be listening. Mm-hmm. So one, you have a director, someone newly promoted at a bank to director. It's her first major leadership role. She's managing a team of 12. Her head's spinning. I came through COVID. I have wide span of control. I have all these employees saying, where's my promotion? It doesn't feel new. I mean, it's not the same for me because it's new. And then at the other end, you have someone who's a CEO of a mid-sized company, says, boy, it's hard to recruit talent. I'm going up against the banks, tough to get them. I'm losing people to, you know, high salaries in tech, what have you. So what stayed the same? What should they know?
Fundamentally, and I've been interviewing people for a substantial part of my life, that I would boil it down to people really want two things. And so leaders need to know that generally speaking, they are looking for two things. People are looking for the opportunity to do challenging and interesting and impactful work. Mm-hmm. Talented people.
The ones you want.
The ones you want. Want to be able to do challenging and interesting and impactful work, period. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to work on the cool things. They want to be able to have accountability for something. They want to be responsible mm-hmm. for something. And the second thing that they want is to work for somebody else who's talented. Hmm. And so they want to work for someone who's going to open doors for them, who's going to give them visibility, who's going to keep that work coming that's challenging and interesting, and somebody who they know has their back and is going to develop them, right? So when I interview people and have over the years, they are generally solving for one or two or both of those things. So they come to me and say, I want out, the work is boring. I want out, I don't like my boss. I really want out, I don't like my boss and
my work. Exactly.
You know, it generally comes down to I've plateaued.
Right.
I'm looking for the next interesting thing. I really want to get ahead and I'm looking up. And I've never worked in the US, so I think I need to work in the US. And so that's generally what people have always wanted is to work for someone who's talented, opens doors and has their backs and is rooting for them.
Now, super interesting what you didn't say. Money.
Right.
You know, no mention of compensation.
Yeah.
And you didn't mention culture.
Right.
You know, and I know organizations like TD talk about the importance of their culture. So can you comment on why those two things were not in your top priorities for talent?
When people are making moves for money, that's a hygiene factor.
We know
that that matters.
Right.
We know it matters. But when it is the reason why people are looking, or title, I throw title in there. So if someone comes to me and says, I want to be an SVP of the bank, I don't know what to do with that because that's not describing the work. They're not telling me I want to do this kind of work. They're just telling me I want this title.
And the novelty will wear off quickly, I'm sure. If
the novelty wears off quickly. And, you know, I used to say that when you give people increases in their compensation, the minute you do that, even if you double their compensation, the minute you do that, they believe that that is exactly what they are worth and they should make more.
That's right.
You know, and it's...
You get credit for half a day.
That's right. You get credit for a couple of hours before they kind of put that jacket on and then they feel, okay, I'm at this level of income and now I'm ready for more. And so it's always a red flag to me because truly talented people do not get hung up on title or compensation. They don't, and I want to come back to the culture piece because that's important. So they don't get hung up on that because they know that if they're following the work, the challenging, interesting, cool work, title and money will come. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I have never asked for a title or an increase in my career. I have never felt like
And yet they've come to. Because you found the work.
That's right.
Right.
And so on culture, people I find generally don't know the culture that they want. They just know the culture that they don't want. Mm.
So it's almost like solving for one and two.
That's right.
Where they'll be in a place where they're, could it be a third? Could we say it's a third?
It could be a third.
They could stay at a place where they love the culture. Maybe two of the three are right.
Yeah. Generally, it's the leader who's carrying the culture for them. So, so that's why
so
I land at the,
two,
it
right.
is kind of, if you've got, if you're working in a culture like TD's where we care about you, we have an inclusive culture, we really believe that people can come and bring their whole selves to work and that they can succeed and grow here. And so we build that into our programs. We build that into our leadership expectations. And so that's what we want people's experience to be. That is behavioral living proof of our culture.
And then that shapes the number two, which is people.
Got it.
So what I'm taking away from this, if we go back to the two individuals, I said, you know, the first thing is that your ability to attract and retain talent doesn't depend on your, for the first manager, for the director, how many years she has.
Mm-mm.
For the CEO, it doesn't depend on his or her company and how
right.
big it is. It's can you cultivate your own leadership and cultivate the talents of others, and that will and give them exciting work, give them advancement, give them opportunity.
That's right. And so you know that, like, I have watched people who've left TD and other organizations where I've been, where they're going for some big job elsewhere. Right. And I thought, oh my gosh, I know the culture over there. And, you know, I just met with somebody last week who had left us a couple of years ago, and he has just reached out to us now to say,
Can I come back? And what did you say?
And I said, of course you can come back. Those are the kinds of stories that I love. But I do watch people make decisions based on title and compensation and other things, and they walk into a culture that where they don't feel safe, where they don't feel as though they can bring their whole
self. And so they have the title, but day in and day out, it's not there.
That's really what it comes down to, is how am I treated when I'm there? Am I treated with respect? Is there this a place where I'm going to get yelled at all the time?
Right. And yeah, the title wears off if you're yelled at every day.
It really does.
And what I'm hearing is really a philosophy around the importance of leaders developing and cultivating talent. Let's just really hone in on that, because I think a lot of people listening could benefit from your wisdom and the kind of TD way.
Yeah.
So let's imagine someone listening or myself reached this moment, been promoted to vice president at TD. And I didn't just want the title. It was given to me after I found the work and I found the leader who I want to work with. So, and I happen to have the title. So yeah, I'm paying attention. And now I've been anointed, and now I get to have coffee with you and I say, Melanie, what should I do to make sure, like, what do you see between doing my job and developing talent? What is the balance? Is there a percentage? And what will success look like for me in this role? What would you say?
I would say that a leader's job is to manage the tension that exists.
And what is that tension?
The tension that exists is between where I am leading, how I am leading this function into the future, and how I envision this function, where it needs to go in the future. So 5 years from now, what does HR need to look like? That's something that as a senior leader here, I need to be figuring out. And the talent that I have on the bench today and how I grow them with the right set of skills, that I give them all of those experiences to truly develop, to get them there, to get them ready. That's my job. And I am constantly in that state of tension. Because I have some people who I think are going to make it there, and I have other people who I'm not sure, but I need them on the bench because they are critical to how the function operates today. And so it's a constant balance. There is no percentage other than to say, I never feel done.
And do you ever feel comfortable when you say
no?
So let's go a bit deeper into that.
But I might be a bit unique in that regard, to be honest with you, Bart. I'm just never comfortable.
But is comfort in talent management a bad thing? Is it a sign that you have a team that is not kind of hungry enough advancing? Like, what are the signs, in other words, that I should be aware of? Here, I'm a new VP. What signs should I watch for that should ring as warning bells for me in the practice of talent management?
I think that you should never take for granted. That's, I think, where I go
with... Never take your people for granted? Yeah.
Never take whatever the situation is that you have. So I talk to leaders sometimes and they say, well, I don't have any issues. I know exactly who my successor is going to be. I've got three other people there. They're working away. They're getting these great experiences. Well, I am set. Right. I have done
Call
my
me
job.
In 3 years.
Exactly. Now I get to coast. And the reality is that you cannot take that situation for granted. And so having those conversations regularly and check-ins regularly with people and ensuring that their development plans are in place and are active and that they feel supported by you and that they know the plan for them. And so what that does and what it needs to do is that same leader might call me a month from now and say, this one person I have working for me in New York has just resigned.
Right.
Doubled their income and they got a way bigger job at this other company.
They got a great title and income. don't know what they're going to do.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. So that's why, I mean, you can't, right. You really can't rest on your laurels. Even as a VP who's new in the role, you have to get to know the people mm-hmm. that you have working for you. You have to know what matters to them.
And doesn't that also mean, I mean, I think about the discussion we've had about what's changed in the last 5 years. We didn't even really talk about AI and the rise of AI and how that's transforming work. Doesn't it also mean that you can't ever give clarity, certainty. You maybe give clarity, but you can't give certainty to your direct reports.
Right.
So how do you advise leaders to talk to talent about the future in a time when it seems like everything is shifting?
Yeah, I loved what you just said, though, in your question. You can give clarity, but not certainty. Mm-hmm. And so I've had hundreds of people sit in front of me and say, when am I going to, you know, I'm doing everything I have to do to be a VP at the bank, right. or an SVP at the bank. Am I ever going to make it there?
Tell me the day.
And I have said to them, maybe. You know, maybe your dance card will come up, right? At a certain point in time, in a certain context, you may be the person we absolutely need in that role. And I encourage leaders to be honest and to provide that clarity. Right. It's okay to say, I'm not sure it's going to happen here. I'm just not sure it's going to happen here. The reality is that this role requires you to spend time and to have this depth of knowledge. You don't have it. You don't have it.
And you're doing that person a favor.
Letting people know where they stand is something that I think is very important. Leading people on to believe that there's going to be an opportunity for them when you know that's not going to happen isn't fair.
Is that something you see frequently in managers?
I don't see, but I do see managers dodge the questions because they don't want to say to somebody it's not going to happen.
Right.
And they don't want to say that to them because they don't want to hurt someone's feelings.
They respect the person.
They respect them and they don't want to lose them.
Right.
They don't want to lose them, but the reality is that that's not fair to the individual. They deserve to be able to do the work that they are qualified and ready to do, and if that's not here, then you have to let go the fact that them leaving isn't perfect for you, but it is right for them.
And it goes back to what you're saying, which is that talent is dynamic.
It's dynamic.
And that you have to embrace the idea that you have to cultivate and develop talent. And I imagine also if that person isn't going to be the next, you kind of need to clear that seat to maybe bring in the next person who could be.
That's right. And that is the leader's role, mm-hmm. right? Is if you're really looking out for the organization you work for, and I said this to a group this morning, I need you to think as leaders of the bank in building this function. I don't need you to think about your world and whether or not somebody is delivering for you personally. That's important. But I need you to think about talent in terms of the bench we have at the bank, because your role as an executive is to make sure that we have the best talent who are working
for
us.
A collective.
That's the only way that we're going to win versus any of the organizations on the other corners of Bay Street here, is we have similar roles, people doing similar work. Mm-hmm. We just want to have the
You just have better talent.
Better talent, the right talent for us in particular, right?
It's got to
be
good point there.
People who aren't just great at what they do, but great at what they do and who fit the culture here. Because if they don't fit the culture here, then that's not going to work.
Yeah, they'll be better served elsewhere.
That's right.
We've covered a lot of ground. I'm going to ask you, you've given really clear, you provide clarity, not certainty, in this uncertain world. When you reflect back on your career, because you've managed talent yourself.
Yeah.
What's the biggest mistake you've made that you now can give advance warning to others not to make?
You know, I'm not pausing because there isn't anything that I can talk about. I'm pausing because there's many things that I could probably talk about in response to that question. I think that what would bubble to the top, though, for me is a mistake that I made was early in my executive experience, thinking that succession management was somebody else's responsibility. And so I remember vacating a role earlier in my career when I was maybe a first-time VP, and my boss saying to me, well, who would you recommend does your role? And And it dawned on me that there probably wasn't someone that I had developed who had the right set of capabilities to be able to do the role. And that wasn't okay. And it isn't okay. It isn't okay for leaders to think that succession planning is somebody else's responsibility. It is our responsibility. And I see it time and time again where leaders say, I want that next opportunity or want that next promotion. And when I say to them, and who are you developing to do the role in behind you, they don't have an answer for that. And you can't single-handedly put a department or a function at risk by having no answer to a succession plan. It's not fair to the organization. It's not fair to customers. And I think that is true, whether you're running a call center of 15,000 people or whether you're running your own organization that you built where you're the founder or the owner and you've got 15 or 30 people who are working in that organization. It's your responsibility to make sure that you have succession candidates who are getting ready to take over. Otherwise, you're going to leave or you're going to have to hire someone from outside your organization and pay big dollars for that. And that rarely works. And so bringing somebody in to run your company or your function from the outside goes back to that comment that I made about culture fit. You're taking a bet. You're taking a big bet. And it's so much better to be building succession and always have an eye on who you're developing to take over for you when you're ready to move on. It's critically important. And I see leaders basically absolve themselves of the responsibility of doing that. And it's not fair and it's not appropriate. The other thing that I think about too, though, is probably mistakes I've made in the past is not moving on talent fast enough where I knew that talent or that individual was not likely to go further in their careers. And so I allowed them to become blockers for talent that's coming up the pipeline, who at the end of the day, in the long term, would probably be stronger fits for that role. And to really help that individual who's sitting in that chair move on to a role that's the right next fit for them. And so talent is dynamic and it is a long-term game. And so you have always got to keep your eye on where you are headed from a talent perspective and to always be assessing and recognizing that in good organization, talents move up, they move out, they get development experiences elsewhere within your organization. And that's good. That is good that you are leading in that dynamic way. And so probably in the past, I didn't act on talent that I knew was either blocking other talent or that it was time for them to move to a different role. And so I learned over the years of how to do that more actively. But definitely succession planning and succession management is something that is a leader's responsibility, hands down.
Well, thanks for sharing your lessons from a tremendous career so far.
Thank you.
And thanks for this discussion. I mean, I think, what I'm taking away is, look, it is an incredibly dynamic last 5 years in the world. But with all that, as you said, the things that motivate talent, the desire to do exciting work and to do it for leaders who advance their career has never changed. And that whatever organization you're in, and many are lucky enough to work here and get the clarity, but everyone listening, I think, can take away that you can intentionally cultivate this kind of talent. And you just need to know what motivates them and then be really direct because it ultimately serves everyone's interests.
It does. And direct doesn't mean blunt, right? Mm-hmm.
And it can be caring too.
It means authentic. Right. It means really authentic. And I think that when you care, when you truly care about people, you are going to be honest with them. When you don't actually care that much about people, you're not that honest with them. Okay. And so when leaders say to me, I'm a caring leader, then go, tell somebody.
Right. If you care enough, tell them the truth.
Because that to me is what caring really is. And I've said to many people, I know this is a tough message for you to receive, but I care enough about you to tell you this because it matters.
And then one day you get to celebrate them when they're in the role that they need to be.
That's right. That's right. And so leaders need to get to this place where they realize that talent and talent management in particular isn't something that you just do once a year when you're running a talent review process, that it is something that you are constantly thinking about, just as you're thinking about your business, your mm-hmm. results, and your culture. It's vitally important that talent is one of the most important things for you to care about and pay attention to.
I love it. And you know, for, as someone who's in the leadership communication business, the idea that every interaction with your people represents an opportunity to inspire them mm-hmm. is deeply resonating with me.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate you coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
It's been a great conversation, and thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Inspire Podcast and the conversation that I had with our guests. And hopefully you left with some really practical, tangible tools and tips that you can use to be more consistently inspirational. If you're enjoying the pod, I'll ask you a favor. Please rate and review it. I love the comments, appreciate the reviews, and the visibility allows others to discover the pod. It's really how word of mouth has spread the Inspire Podcast to so many listeners and helped us keep making this great content. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another inspiring conversation. Thanks so much for listening. Go forth and inspire.